As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, this is The Ruck from our Cape Town studios overlooking the harbour. It's rather beautiful, Jonesy. There was a seal playing around in the water just underneath my my hotel room balcony earlier on.
Was there really? Who do you think you are? David Attenborough?
Well,
it is a beautiful scene and in the Mother City, and it's an absolutely spectacularly beautiful city as well. In all respects, it's just a shame there's not thousands of fans here to see it, Owen.
I know. So listen, if you haven't worked this out, this is me, Owen Slot, and I'm here with Jonesy, Stephen Jones. And yeah, we are really, really delighted to be here in Cape Town. But as Jonesy said, just phenomenally disappointed that it's not the spectacle that it should be for tens of thousands of people.
And also, Owen, for at a time when the South Africa's in turmoil, you know, it's on all the CNN bulletins today about rioting and looting and COVID, that it's just such a shame for them and their economy. You know, I mean, the taxi driver who brought me down to your palatial hotel, whose name was Patrick, he said that I was his first fare today, and he got on at 9 a.m. And now it's, 5 hours later, and I was his first fare. So I did tip him handsomely, but I just felt very sorry for him.
It's very sad. It's really, I mean, to have the rioting and the country sort of at the hands of anarchists in the middle of a COVID pandemic, which is as awful as it could be anyway. The country's supposed to be in lockdown, but the only people breaking lockdown, it appears to be the people looting shopping malls and... they should be, if they had any sense, they'd be breaking down the doors of Greenpoint Stadium to watch the test matches.
Well, it would be lovely if they were. We were very close to it in our previous stopover, as you know, because they gave us little panic buttons to press if anything bad happened or if anyone crept up. But we didn't need them. But shops that we were in were looted next day, so it brought it home to us. And just what a country in turmoil, but this beautiful place is.
The biggest threat we had actually in our last stop over just outside Durban, Jonesy, was actually the monkeys coming onto your balcony and stealing the sugar from the coffee machine.
Well, they tell you what, they're the worst trained monkeys I've ever seen. They think they need a bit of training because they were absolutely running wild, didn't they? They have no discipline at all. It's like my kids when they were younger.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry if your kids were like that, but these were very out of order, these monkeys.
It's terrible. And they was actually got a little bit of spite with it to them as well. That's what I didn't like. They didn't take it in good part at all.
They didn't do, like, tricks and entertain us, did they? They actually threw a stone at one of the windows.
Yeah, they were only out for themselves, be fair. Yeah, they were self-centred monkeys.
It was not in the spirit of the Lions tour.
Or the tour. No, of course it wasn't. No. They didn't even know the Lions were on.
No, they didn't. They didn't ask our thoughts on selection.
No, they didn't. Well, they're the only ones who didn't. Mind you, as usual, we gave them our thoughts on selection anyway, whether they asked or not.
So this is Thursday, late afternoon. We've sort of got a sundown, haven't we?
Yes.
Are we allowed to say that we've found a way around the alcohol ban?
No, we're not allowed to say that.
No, we haven't found a way around the alcohol ban, honestly.
No, we haven't got anyone feeding in regular drinks at all from Stellenbosch or anything.
No, but we do have a gin and tonic each.
Yeah, we do, but there's no ice or lemon.
No, sorry about that.
That's our
it doesn't count as a gin and tonic.
No, it doesn't. That's our nod to the rules as they stand.
Last night we went to the Greenpoint Stadium, which is, from where we're staying, it's just a walk away, actually. Oh, we shouldn't say that, should we, because we're putting in taxi receipts.
I didn't put one in there. You probably did, but what would you put your taxi receipt in for?
Massive. Okay. The stadium, sorry, if you listen, the stadium's actually 10 miles away from where we are.
Yeah, it's mainly because it's right outside the window as well. How can it be 10 miles?
Yeah.
Anyway, that was Greenpoint Stadium, the first time I've seen a live game there, and really, Owen, the first time we've seen a really competitive game on this whole tour, I'd say.
Yeah, but just on that stadium... Wow, I mean, I hadn't been in there before, and we don't want to sort of go on and on about what a shame it is there's no fans, but you saw that place, and you didn't take a very, very vivid imagination to think how magnificent it would have been with the good old sea of red and just, the cacophony of noise that would have been here.
Well, you just, as soon as you go in, you think, wow, and you almost drift away and imagine this, but the boiling sea of red, you know, and the, not only that, but the good humour and the drinking, the bonhomie and all that sort of stuff, you know, no hint of problems, etc. And it just would have been lovely. The mother city would have been absolutely crawling with fans. So we say it every week, but I have to say that's only because the impact of not having them never lessens, frankly.
No, it doesn't. It's going to be there all the way to the end. So the game last night, as you say, that was proper. I mean, we were calling it the fourth test.
Hmm.
We didn't actually even need to make that up because Conor Murray called it the fourth test.
Yes.
And do you think it actually delivered on that?
I do. I think it delivered in the sense that it really reminded you what a savage environment there is in South Africa. It showed the South Africans that the Lions can stand up to it. And it was incredibly intense. There was a stage where you think the Lions could lose by 30. They didn't. They were only a score behind for a long time and probably should have been even closer. So, as I keep saying, for many tours, probably 20 years or more, the Lions have never seen the great home players before the Test Series. Well, now they have. The Springboks had to show some of their hand, not all of it, but some of their hand. And the Lions, in terms of the scrum and the driving ball, proved that they could deal with it. And I think that's a big bonus. I really do.
So as you say, that the Springboks took off at a pace. It was 17-3 up within 25 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
And at that point, you could sort of wince slightly and wonder what we were in for. And then the Lions levelled it up. So there are two ways of looking at it. Was it... A, some Springboks who had been in a week's isolation and only had two training sessions, therefore they were inevitably going to run out of steam? Or was it B, the Lions, who hadn't had decent opposition so far, therefore they came in soft and hardened themselves pretty quickly to the challenge?
That's a very good question. I think
occasionally it happens.
Excellent good question. Yeah, it was an excellent question. I don't know. I think both factors are just significant. I mean, you do run out of steam if you've not been playing very often. There's no question about that. But on the other hand, you know, you don't actually need a lot of physical endurance to do some of the things that were happening there. So I think it's 50-50. And I think that the morale of the Lions lasted really well. They took some crushing tackles. Two tries, which came across rather easily. And I think that the Lions bounced back well and showed that they can hold the driving maul and they can hold the scrum. And when you consider that Ty Furlong wasn't there, I think that's praiseworthy.
Yeah. Do you think they'll kick the ball straight to Cheslin Colby again? Or do you think maybe that was a little lesson?
Not the best idea. I thought the Lions' kicking game really was execrable. Poor Owen Farrell, it came in just before the game. That was never easy. I thought Conor Murray's box kicks were rank. I mean, they were so... to make them contestable, they were so short and so low to make them so the Lions could chase them. He didn't have the confidence or the length of the leg to put them up high. I think the Lions were in a bog there. They just couldn't get out of their own half for a long time.
Isn't it sort of strange that we've got to this stage of the tour and you mentioned Murray and Farrell, who you would say are sort of two big senior men on this group, and yet there's big question marks there, and that's not going to be the halfback partnership. It's questionable whether either of them should be playing.
It is. I think that actually we knew before last night, it's very doubtful if Owen... I mean, look, no one I think us two both see the incredible intensity and the passion of the guy and the consistency until recently. I think he'll play a part in the Test series. Don't think he'll start. I think Conor Murray last night was his own drama, Owen, because his passing was funereal.
You wrote quite a critical piece on him in the time.
I did, because he'd get the ball, he'd bend down to pick it up, he'd stand up instead of sweeping it across his body, and he the time he took to make a choice to play, he'd start jogging towards the players he might pass to, and eventually pass to someone who had a Springbok on top of him. I thought it was absolutely awful, and he must know that, and so did Gatland. And I think that, for me, Ali Price, who's much sharper, maybe not as great an all-round player, if the Lions want to play any sort of rugby, Ali Price has got to, first of all, play well this Saturday against the Stormers. And then if he does, I'm almost certain he'll be in. He should be.
Well, no, I agree that on what we've seen here, he should be. Gatland's not scared of big controversial selections, as we know. Brian O'Driscoll might come on and remind us of that.
Yes, he might. Yeah, or any other Irishman he'll remind you.
That would be another huge call, wouldn't it? Conor Murray's the tour captain as it stands. Do you really think that he would do that?
Well, I think he's got to. I mean, what Warren is no fool. And last night, one of the huge problems they had was Conor's absolutely slow coach delivery to the people outside, and his selection of options was terrible. And Ali Price is probably a different man in that he just bombs it out there, gets it going, comes in and whips it away. Whether or not it's then the right option, it may be different. But I mean, he has been, of the three, easily the most scrum half, and the most efficient man to work the scrum, as we say, of the three that they've got here.
I agree. I do agree. But we're back to sort of that kind of question of Conor Murray was poor against good opposition. Mm. Ali Price has been good against poor opposition. So did I get that right? No. Got that wrong.
Yeah, I think
Conor Murray was poor against good opposition.
Yeah.
And Ali Price has been good against poor opposition.
Well, is it not surely the role of the Lions scrum half and captain to prove he is good against good opposition? And last night, Conor Murray did not do that.
Yeah, no, you've nailed that. By the way, we just sort of skated over it. So Jonesy wrote a piece on that in the Times today. So this is Jonesy, who is the Sunday Times, the king of the Sunday Times.
Hmm.
You've been in the Daily Paper 3 days in a row now. How are you handling daily journalism?
I tell you what, I've never done anything easier in my life. Honestly, the other things I did, I painted the guinea pig hutch once. That was easy. What else did I do? Oh, I once walked down the garden, and my driving test was a little bit more difficult. The rest is so easy. And no wonder you boys are just on the socialising all the time and never do much work. It's bloody easy. Sunday paper is just so difficult. But, God, dear, this is the life of Riley.
So you're going to carry on then? Are you going to do this for the rest of the tour? 3 or 4 days a week?
No, I'm going to just do it 5 minutes a day. That's all it takes, really.
Exactly.
But it's a
gift to the readers, though, isn't it?
Well, it is. I am. But I've got to keep my real energy back for the main difficult thing on the weekend, the Sunday Times. But fair play. I look upon you all in a new light now. I never knew how easy it was.
Good. Well, I'm glad we've established that. What else are we supposed to talk about? let's go through. Should we go through the team?
Yeah.
All right. So let's try and run through the team quickly. Having seen last night, let's go 1 to 15 and who we think will be Warren Gatland's starters.
Yes.
All right. I'll kick off with the front row.
Yes.
I think that he will go. Well, actually, Wyn Jones last night was the best loose head we've seen so far.
Yes.
So on that evidence, you'd have Wyn Jones and Tadhg Furlong as your props.
Yes.
I'm not going to say a hooker because that's impossible. The three brilliant ones. I have absolutely no idea.
It is impossible. I just don't know why I say this, because I think Luke Cowan-Dickie is an absolutely magnificent player. I think it'll be between the Sheriff, Ken Owens, and Jamie George. I think Jamie just narrowly, but Ken Owens is such a good player these days. In fact, I think he's a great player.
Do you not think you can have Luke Cowan-Dickie off the bench? Because he is like what you might call a game changer.
Yes.
You don't often say that of hookers, but he scores tries and he breaks tackles. And
yes.
He has a bit of X factor in that regard that Jamie and Ken Owens don't have.
I agree with you, and I think that it's highly likely that the other two hookers will both start test matches, but Cowan-Dickie will be on the bench for all three. And he does come on and he can make a sensational difference because he's a great player. Jamie George effectively is the man in possession. But, you know, blimey, they're not going to win or lose a test match depending on who they pick a hooker, because I think they're all tremendous and they're very lucky there. Yeah. Very lucky.
What do you reckon? Second row is straightforward-ish?
It was straightforward. I think Marrow last night stood up to the plate, as they say. That he had an excellent game. Ian Henderson was slightly quieter, but he's had a great tour, and he's a tough boy. But he's not a great. He's not a spring-heeled line-out man. The question is, I think if you play Henderson there, it does then. The prerequisite is for Courtney Laws, I think, to be six in the lineout, because he's a really outstanding lineout forward, and I think that gives Courtney the edge at six over Tyburn. There is this other element that Alan Wynne Jones is playing on the bench against the Stormers. We'll both be there in the stadium on Saturday, Owen, and I can't believe they would have brought him all the way over and stuck him on the bench if Gatland had no intention of playing him at some part of the Test series.
Well, I think Alan Wynne will be starting by the second Test. He might be on the bench for the first Test, but he's in there, isn't he? He's going to play a major role now.
And I do think that very, very unfair. Say Henderson is the one to lose out. I think it'd be very unfair unless they pay Henderson six, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, look, I don't think it's quite as guaranteed as you do, but I think there's no way you'd come all this way if Gatland has said, look, son, there's no way you're playing in the Test match.
Henderson could lose out altogether, because if you play Marrow, Jones in lock forward, Courtney at six, I agree. Courtney, yeah. I think, has been slightly protected.
Yeah.
He didn't play on Wednesday and he won't play on Saturday.
Yeah.
Curry, I think, will be seven, and I still suspect Faletau on his previous, we'll get the nod at eight.
Just before we go on from Faletau, I just think that Conan the Barbarian could, if he has a tremendous game, because I think he's an excellent player, he could just make Gatland think at number eight, because I think Talupe is not quite himself, although he can produce it on the big occasions.
Yeah, but the point about Henderson is if he doesn't make the starting 15, then you'll probably have Tyburn on the bench.
Yes.
Because he covers Lochan and Blindside. So, I don't know. So I think it's really interesting. I think they might be moving towards a 6-2 bench.
Yes, indeed. Well, the box will be. So that's definite. So, yes, and that gives you the option to really power up the scrum and the forward pack later on. So I think that's what will happen.
So we both think Ali Price should play at nine, but we don't know if he will, because it might be Murray. And we think Dan Bigger, if his ankle is okay, is a shoo-in at 10.
Yes, we do, and we wouldn't have said that on the last tour, but this time it looks like it. But how sorry do you feel for Finn Russell that he hasn't had the chance to show what he can do?
Yeah. I feel sorry for him, and I feel sad that's one part of the narrative that this Lions tour has been robbed of, because it was just fascinating to see how he would handle the challenge of the Lions and how Gatland would use him. Would he use him? I mean, he's still here, so he's not been sent home. Injured players get sent home. They don't. And let's face it, you wouldn't hang around in South Africa under lockdown now, unless there was something in it for you. So
no.
They surely think there's something still in it for him, which I think is fascinating.
Well, so do I. I think Jimmy, I hadn't thought of that before, so I'm lying when I say so do I. I think that's a good point. That's a good point.
Well, it's great to make them occasionally.
Well, it is. It's about time. We've been doing the ruck for a year.
For five years, mate.
5 years, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. We sound a bit weary, by the way. There's a reason for that.
I actually really love Finn Russell, and I would have loved to see him fulfil himself here. And you know, one lesson which I'm sure we'll talk about towards the end of the tour is it is too short to guarantee everybody has a chance. It really is. It really is.
Centres, Gatland's desperate to see a half. Anything decent from Henshaw gets him a start, doesn't it?
Yeah, Henshaw's been injured. He's only got to walk on at the field and walk off at the end to be the inside centre.
Yeah, yeah. But so a decent walk.
Exactly. So the other thing is, Chris Harris, I think we both like on this trip. But I also think that the courage and the power of Bundy Aki, who's not actually, you wouldn't call him a brilliant talent, but I think he'd be a good backup, and I think it'll be Henshaw and Chris Harris with Bundy Aki coming on at some stage. I think, look, we saw the power of Lacanio Am and Damien Delende.
Lacanio Am is brilliant.
What a player.
I just thought he's quite scary powerful.
Yes, he is.
So, listen, if here's what I've been thinking. If it's going to be a 6-2 bench, then I think he has to play Elliot Daly at 13.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if it's going to be a 6-2 bench...
At 13 in the starting team?
Yes.
Right.
Because if it's going to be a 6-2 bench, you've got to have a nine on the bench. Yeah?
Yes.
And you've got to have Owen Farrell, because if Dan Bigger goes down, you've got to have another 10. So the only way you can cover the rest of the field is if you've got Elliot Daly out there already.
And
in today's press conference, when asked about Daly, Warren Gatland could have been asked about the fact that Daly played 80 minutes last Saturday, 65 minutes yesterday, and he's starting again on Saturday's game. So that's three games in 8 days, which is bang out of order, if you ask me.
Yes.
But Gatland said he wanted to see Daly outside Henshaw.
That is very interesting.
Well, and occasionally, you know.
No, that's yet another interesting point you made. And look, the one thing we saw last night is you cannot afford to have anyone in the midfield who's not a resounding physical presence.
Yeah.
And I think that Elliot Daly is by no means a poor defender, but he's not an all-enveloping defender, which I think Chris Harris is. So in that case, I would opt for the 5-3, not the 6-2, because I don't think you can do that. You're dead right. You've got to have a 9 on the bench. You have to have a 10, and Daly with Chris Harris in the team. I think that's the way I would pick it. Definitely. So you would go.
I'm not saying I would do, because I don't think Daly is. I don't think he's. I mean, I think he's had quite a good tour.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on a sec. It's my phone. It's got the. Dialing tune of the Pink Panther.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, it's the other boys. We'll call them back in a minute. It's Johnny and Gav.
Oh, well, don't bother with them.
I think they're ringing about dinner.
Right.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Back three.
Well, poor Stuart Hogg's been robbed of a good chance, and I feel for him. But I think we've been well enough convinced by Liam Williams and his prowess in the air So we would like Williams to start, and I think Gatlin would like him to start as well if he recovers from. Well, he's got to get through an HIA, isn't he?
Yes, yes, yeah. I think Liam definitely, because he's a bomb diffuser in the modern idiom, and Faf de Klerk puts up a lot of bombs. And then on the wing, last two games, Anthony Watson's really come into his own, I find. I think he's a great player, tough and resourceful. And in a group of four wings, none of whom have had bad tours. And so the other position then becomes, in my opinion, between Duan van der Merwe and Josh Adams, who's scoring tries by the hatful.
Yeah, they're both playing on Saturday night.
Oh, yes, they are. So that'll be Saturday night's game could be a kind of shootout. That's right.
I've been really impressed by van der Merwe. And I was a bit... I felt for Reece Zammit a bit yesterday when he was really trying to do something early when he did his fast crabbing across the pitch and got absolutely flipping clobbered.
He did, but I mean, what he was doing was he was playing defence for the chip from Faf, and that that's what they were playing. Either the scrum half or the far wing has got to be there, and he took it and really had nowhere to go. I think he should have hoofed it, but I think he's probably a little bit. It's a little bit before his time. This tour, he could become a really, really good player. But would you have Watson and Duhan like me, Duhan van der Merwe?
I just feel scared that we've been sucking it into Duhan van der Merwe by the fact that he's scored lots of great tries and has looked brilliant against the average teams that he's played against.
Yeah,
So Reece Zammit looked pretty decent until last night when he played against Springboks. Wonder what van der Merwe would have looked like. Has van der Merwe proven anything under a high ball? They'll just do that all
that's
day,
a,
won't
that's
they?
A very good point. And actually, some of the whispers amongst our colleagues from South Africa are that they do want him to play because they think he's not that great under the high ball. So we'll see. But it's time for everybody to step up. If he's not great under the high ball, he better become great under the high ball in about five days.
Yeah, I just suspect that. Well, I don't know. We'll see how it goes tomorrow, but I think that Gatland knows he can trust Josh Adams, and he also knows that Josh Adams is in good form. So I suspect that might swing that one.
It might do, but all I just to have the final word, I think that Josh Adams is a great try scorer, a great finisher, but whether this game rests on those little moments of genius way out on the wing, I doubt. I doubt the game's going to be like that. But you never know. If he gets the ball and scores a try from nothing, well, I was wrong.
Well, you suppose what you're saying is that if you wanted an X-factor player to score the try that might settle the series or whatever, then the wings you're talking about are Reece Zammit and maybe van der Merwe.
Okay. No, I don't think it'll work out that way. And I'd just like to see Watson there, just like Watson always have, since he was a kid of 15.
Faf started quite well, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And, I think in the first 20 minutes, as I wrote in that daily paper, he'd put up, he'd been involved in a fight. He'd thrown the ball at Kyle Sinclair. He rushed in towards a fight to carry on it rather than stop it. He put up some great box kicks. He made a break. He was brilliant at picking out which of the runners was running best and all that. And
he even managed to get a red card turned into a yellow.
We got red into yellow, which was a red in anyone's book.
Yeah.
And also then he's also like a flanker, because if you notice, when he doesn't follow the ball around the scrum, he stands there staring balefully at the 10, as like a blonde bombshell open-side flanker. And look, the bloke is amazing. He's so quick-witted and so good to watch. If he was your player, you'd love him. But I mean, it's such a contrast to Conor Murray last night. Obviously, Conor doesn't play the same sort of game. It's not his fault, but blimey, he was effective. And he stayed on till the end as well, I think, didn't he?
So we've got Saturday's game coming up now. That's the last trial for, last chance saloon for people to put their hands up for selection.
Yes.
If Marcus Smith has a blinder, no, we can't take that seriously, can we?
No, we can't. I think he's fortunate with respect to become a British line in the way he has. I really do.
You'd have had someone else come in instead?
No, I wouldn't have brought anyone for a start because they've already got two tens. But I just think that he was brought in as some sort of two fingers to a certain England coach for a start, but that may be
do
wrong.
Do you?
Yes, I may be wrong. I may be wrong. Robbie Henshaw's got to prove his fitness. Adams can do himself a lot of good on the wing. Ali Price can do himself a world of good. Wyn Jones is obviously going to come on at some stage.
I'll tell you, what could be interesting is if Hamish Watson has another barnstormer, then Warren Gatland's got to take that seriously. Or do you just think that Tom Curry's so good that he doesn't?
I think Watson is a rumbustious player.
That's a good thing to be.
But you've got to have more. I mean, I think Tom Curry is finding it a little bit difficult to pick up the systems, but I think he's just a beast, and I think that he'll get the job. I really do. Just one last faint chance for Rory Sutherland this week. I don't think he's been that great at all. I thought he'd be better and more aggressive. He's on the loose head, so he's got a chance. And it'd be nice if Tyde Furlong against the Stormers shows well, because he's coming up to the test. It's about time he stood himself a bit. But does have the look of the sort of roughly the second team about it. But still a fascinating game, Owen.
Do you think that Sam Simmons hasn't quite lived up to what people hoped? I'm just convinced that Warren wants him to come off the bench. He's everything about him says big impact substitute, doesn't it?
But it does.
I don't think he's made it a big impact yet. Which is, again, he's picked for the bench tomorrow. I think Warren is giving him lots of opportunities to go, yes, this is why I should be picked.
He is. But don't forget, he's not a significant number of international appearances. And he's coming out of club rugby. I think he's a great talent. And I think people are saying, oh, this great maverick, we're going to see him making 60 or 70-yard runs. Well, even against the Sharks second team, I don't think that was ever going to happen, because it doesn't happen like that. And I actually think he's acquitted himself nobly without tearing up the grass. So I still think he's a good player. I think he's a worthy selection. And he's got another chance coming on as sub this weekend.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to have dinner with the others.
Sorry?
Should we go and catch up with the others for dinner?
Yeah, go on then.
Let's stress, it's an alcohol-free dinner.
Yeah.
You are now in South Africa. They've lifted the restrictions, so you can actually go out to eat.
Yeah.
You don't have to have hotel room service meals like we did initially.
It's not the same though, is it?
Well, you can sit around a table with people.
Yeah.
But you can't have a glass of wine.
Would you rather sit on your own and have a glass of wine?
Sometimes. Yeah. So we're going to go over now, because there's a lot more to come. Jonesy's had a good conversation with Brendan Nell, who is our Springbok correspondent.
He's
really,
a newsman, a news hound as well.
He's a news hound. And he gave us three nice bottles of wine last week, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
But we shouldn't publish that.
No. Well, I do mention that in the interview to come.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, but I didn't say wine. I just said banned substances.
He brought some banned substances from the Ernie Ales vineyard, didn't
he? Yes, he did, yeah.
And that was a very nice...
Well, Ernie now is a better winemaker than he is a golfer. Have you seen him play?
No.
He's
shit. Well, his wine's half decent, so well done him. Two decent talents, making wine and playing golf. Okay, thank you, Ruck listeners. We will now hand over to Jonesy and Brendan Nell in conversation.
We're now going to speak to Brendan Nell, one of the leading South African rugby writers, and he has been for probably longer than he'd care to admit, Bren. lovely to be back in your wonderful country. What did you make of the Box A game last night that we've just been speaking off air and saying it was really the first aggressive, proper tour game that we've seen?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. It was the first game that we've seen that's actually of any consequence to either side, I think, probably at the moment. I know the Lions have been getting some great hit outs, but from the one point, it brings the Lions back down to earth in a way, in the fans, South African fans, that they're not this invincible team that's going through the country winning by 70 points. And I think for the Box, the hit out was great. I think both teams learnt enough out of that. And I think there's enough for both coaches to work on. I think the Box will reckon that first 30 minutes will do them well. And I think they can rattle the Lions in the test.
Sure. Brendan, by the way, is you will have seen his byline with his news stories in the Times and the Sunday Times, but he's performing a much more key duty for the media out here in providing what are banned substances, not for sale in this country. They're of the red and white shade, and he's performed a valiant service so far. Bren, the box A were very, very strong. Who do you think is going to come into that side for the test matches? Obviously, Malherbe on the tight end possibly, but who else?
Well, I think well, if we just see, look at that A-team game, the Trevor Niakani's couple of scrums didn't go so well. So I think Frans Malherbe will have to come in. Frans doesn't do too much around the park, but he can scrum, and I think that'll be a key attack point for the box in those tests. Andre Pollard, if he is ready, if he's over the COVID, he'll be one of the guys I think will come back into it as well. Looking at else, just not too many others, to be very honest. I think we might see Kwakha Smith at eight. I'm not sure if Jasper Visser will go into the test. They might put him on the bench. And or maybe one of the Dupria twins, you know, over there. But the rest, I think, is more or less. We might also Hooker, sorry, just if Bongi Mbonambi is right or Malcolm Marks, I think we probably have a different starting Hooker as well.
Okay. When you say that Frans doesn't do much around the field, when have you ever cared about what your props do around the field, mate? This is a first.
Well, we have had guys in the past who actually score some beautiful tries. I mean, Richard Bands, Oxen Chairs scored a couple of those long range ones. And Beast also used to get around the park quite a bit as well. So, Frans, you just look at him, you know, he's not going to be moving. He'll wait for the play to come to him rather than go to the play.
No, I know you're right about your mobile props too. Just tell me, you know, we've been obviously both countries have been in the grip of COVID, but at least at the very least, we've seen the Brits and Irish play some rugby, albeit in empty stadiums. You have not seen your team, which won the World Cup. You've not really seen them in a live match in 2019. For a start, a big rugby man like you and your mates, that must have been personally painful.
Yeah, it was. And it was, I mean, it wasn't a great last year. I mean, watching the rugby championship and then, you know, you're having to get all the banter that comes along with Argentina beating the All Blacks and not having any preparation. And South Africa saying they don't have enough preparation. That's why they didn't go. It's not great. I think we all live for sport and we all live for these games. And that's why, I mean, for us, a lot of people I know are quite happy that the Lions Tour is going ahead, even though it isn't COVID, because it takes them away from all the other problems in the country at the moment. And, you love these big games, and that's why we all do this job. We love to be in those big stadiums with big crowds. I must admit, you've been there, Steve, and without fans, it's not the same. It's hollow. It's soulless. It's terrible. And, I mean, at TV, it looks a bit better than it is sitting there.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, well spoken. But, you know, having said that, I mean, I must have known 50 people alone who were coming down on this tour. And, you know, there could have been like 30,000 here. The economy needed it. The fans would have been great. The stadiums. I mean, did you share in this country, Bren, the anger which we felt that there no way could be found to postpone this for 1 year?
Definitely. I think that's probably one of the biggest travesties in the world rugby in the last, you know, 2 years is the fact that nobody would bend over backwards or even bend over a little bit to postpone it. There's no real rugby tours left other than the Lions Tour. Let's be honest. It's a unique thing. It's something other than the World Cup. It's probably the only other unique experience other than the World Cup that's really worth going to as a fan. And I felt we all wanted the fans. I mean, in 97, probably, I always tell people it probably was one of my worst rugby memories was that second test in Durban, the Jeremy Guscott's drop goal. And, yeah, just coming back into that hotel and having that sea of red there in that beachfront hotel in Durban. And everybody, when they see you and they know you're South African, obviously, it started off better. It was great after a couple of beers. You forgot about the rugby as such. But, yeah, it's those sort of things you miss. You miss those fans going around the country. And I just think World Rugby should have done a lot more to protect the brand. And I've got worries because Australia in just as bad state provincially as South Africa. I think they won two games out of 23 against New Zealand sides in this Trans-Tasman series. The Lions are going to have the same problem in Australia when they get there. There's not going to be opposition. There'll probably be more of a tour for fans, but yeah, there's really serious questions and a rethink needed as how to World Rugby actually looks at this tour.
Absolutely correct. Well, and well spoken again. Having said that, they've somehow got through this tour. I mean, you know, empty stadiums, lots of testing, and the box have got COVID, then the Lions have got some, then some other teams got them. It's been sort of just staggering along. But actually, to be perfectly fair, I feel slightly inspired that they've managed to get this far. And now it looks like they will get through to the end. You see this sort of faint background of heroism about the whole thing?
Definitely, I think so. I think the steely resolve that you see in both teams, that, yeah, the rest of us, every time we've heard a positive COVID test, every time you have to ask somebody about something like that, there's, yeah, you in the back of your mind think, oh no, you know, we're getting one step closer to them saying, okay, it's not worth it. But we haven't got to that. And every time we speak to them, they find a way of making it through. And I suppose in some sense they don't really have another choice, because financially this tour means so much to both sides. But yeah, I think the fact that they're getting through this is amazing. And I don't think we'll see it in any other time. Teams would have probably gone home by now.
Absolutely, and given up. Bren, I've been lucky enough to come to here many times. I came first when apartheid was still on. And ever since then, you know, we've had 95, we've had various bubbling issues and quotas, etc. Do you think now that this team has settled down and is seen as a representative team, or are there still sort of racial issues in its formation, or is it now, after all those years, kind of bedded down as a national team?
I think it is definitely a national team, but I mean, you know, we live in South Africa. We continually seem to be having issues that pop up that no other country has, and I wouldn't be surprised if those things bubble up again. You know, in the next, we've seen a lot of backlash in the last year, as well, from sections about the Black Lives Matter and the taking the knee, and not just in rugby and cricket in South Africa. I think most of the world's probably grappled with that. But yeah, this team, when it won the World Cup, anybody who's seen that Chasing the Sun documentary will see how united this team is. And there's a lot more young, talented black players coming through, just the likes of Pepsi Buthelezi and those guys coming through, that it's changing a lot quicker than it was in the past. And yeah, I don't think there's that many issues. You're always going to have one or two guys. You're always going to try and make an issue, in this country. Mm. But I think the majority of people accept that players are players, and they're on talent and merit. And yeah, we don't have as many quota stories going around, if we put it that way, in the media at all anymore.
Sure, Bren. Like I say, I mean, I'm not the only person who loves South Africa. I absolutely adore this place. I hated the idea that we may not even come down, and I once brought my family down to see it. As long as you're careful, it's a great place. But now there's COVID, and there are riots and all that sort of thing. Does your heart tell you that this is still the place to be? And you know, it's obviously in your heart. And do you see that the country will eventually come out of COVID and come out of it? It's sort of its travails and its business problems at the moment, and be a sort of get back on top again.
I'm glad you're asking me this today, not 2 days ago. I think 2 days ago, when everything was at its worst, you know, with the looting and things like that. Yeah. I was at a point. I'm a very optimistic person. I love my country, but I was having my doubts 2 days ago. Somebody said to me, you know, but we're right on the edge, and I sort of reminded them, a thought popped into my head, but when has South Africa not been on the edge? I mean, if you think through the apartheid days, there's always been something happening, and there's always been some sort of riots or something going along. And yes, we have our problems. We've got lots of them. And they need to be sorted out somehow. I think there is a willingness in government, in certain parts of government. We've gone through some really bad times. And I think the response that I've seen, you know, when you see the taxi association, which is not normally our most of those minibus taxis, the most notorious things people hate, them coming out to protect shopping malls and You see communities banding together to clean up, and I feel there's still more good people than bad people in this country, and I think the good will shine through. And I'm not quite sure we're out of the woods yet. I still think it's going to play out, and the response over the next couple of weeks is going to be very interesting to watch. But I still believe there's still more good people than bad people, and this is still a wonderful country.
Absolutely agreed. Well, I got one final question for you, mate. Who's going to win the first test, and then who's going to win the test series? You can have any opinion you want, biased, unbiased, but who's going to win?
I don't think I'd go as bold as some other journalists and say 3-0 either way. But I think it'll be a 2-1 series, and I'm hoping that the side will be the third test and come down to those last 5 minutes of the third test, hopefully. But I could see the box probably being a bit underdone in that first test because of COVID, and because there's certain players, question marks about them and their form and their fitness. But I think they'll storm back in that second test. The Lions probably win the first test by my reckoning, and the box will storm back in the second, and we can have a hell of a decider in the third. And as a South African, I'm obviously going to say South Africa will hopefully win it.
Well done. Well said. I'd have to say a very difficult to take issue there, especially looking at those big, big beasts last night. Brendan, as ever, mate, thanks a million. A passionate South African, but also, like all our listeners, a passionate follower of rugby. Keep those substances coming, mate. We've got a little bit of a shortage at the moment, the red and the white. And that was Brendan Nell. Thank you, Bren. And that's the end of the ruck for today. Twice a week, as you know, we'll be back on Monday. We'll be reporting on the Lions against the Stormers, the preview to the first test match. Please join us. Thank you, Brendan.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.